news and more, including state-by-state reports on the nation's premier youth organization. This is FFA Today on Rural Radio 147.
Well, hello and welcome to this week's FFA Today. I'm your host, Janet Atkison, and we begin this week with a number of exciting opportunities for members and chapters. Is your chapter planning a service project for National FFA Week, which, of course, that's just coming up next month? It's February 16th through the 23rd. Well, chapters can receive up to $400 with a Living to Serve Day of Service mini grant to help fund those projects. You should apply online at ffa.org/livingtoserve/grants. And for alumni, there is now less than a month to register and make a deposit for the inaugural FFA Alumni and Supporters Travel Program to Germany and the Netherlands. That'll be July 1st through the 10th. February 1st is the deadline to sign up, so for more information, go online to ffa.org/alumni benefits. And of course, you can also contact Agro Tours, that's A-G-R-O Tours, at 888-2-AG-TOUR or email info@agrotours.com. And finally, the National Teach Ag Campaign is offering 72 scholarships in 2019 for Ag Ed majors to attend the Future AgriScience Teacher Symposiums. The FAST Symposium event is a professional development experience for pre-service Ag Ed majors. Now, there are four FAST Symposium opportunities to choose from, and all four provide some customized professional development, networking, and mentoring with current and future Ag teachers from across the country. Those who are student teaching in the spring of 2019, fall of this year, and spring of next year receive priority. Now, individuals who wish to attend on scholarship must apply. NAAE student membership is required, and all applications are due online by Sunday, February 10th. That's at 11:59 p.m. Eastern. So you have all day that Sunday to apply, but get it in. And for more information, of course, go online to NAAE.org. And that's a look around the news, but stay tuned because we'll be right back in just a moment with a former Connecticut state officer causing a stir in local politics as well as hydroponics. Find out how next on FFA Today.
For every FFA member, there's a story waiting to be told.
And that's exactly what FFA Today is about.
Stories from and about FFA members.
And showcasing their hard work.
Creative energy.
Love of community.
And passion for agriculture.
All the things that make the FFA great.
FFA Today.
A new weekly program.
From and about FFA members.
And their inspiring stories.
Each week.
On RFB TV.
Well, thanks for tuning in to this week's show. And now, as promised, we head to Connecticut to meet former state reporter Jonathan Russo. And as you'll hear, it was his introduction to FFA that really gave him purpose.
Walking into high school, I had no idea as to what I wanted to do with myself. No goals, no real ambition, no reason to live. As most high schoolers do, I reached a point of weakness with only one question echoing through my mind, day by day. Why am I here? A question that everyone asks themselves. A question that takes them a lifetime to answer. In my time of need, where I couldn't find anything to do with myself, the FFA grabbed me by the arm, put a bag of seed in my hand, and said, "John, live for the sake of others." Upon receiving my Green Hand degree as a freshman, I realized that I had become part of something bigger than myself, and had the hindsight to see that I owed the rest of my life to that larger mission, for I knew that I'd be non-existent without it. At that point, I knew that I wanted to do the same for others, to find those that too suffered in the silence, to teach them how to break it and speak. What does it mean to speak? Is it merely the act of conveying information with one's mouth? To speak is to have enough confidence in your own cause, your purpose, to share it with the world, to share one's passion. Because you have the conviction to shout from the rooftops, "I believe in the future of agriculture," with the faith, born not of words, but of deeds. To speak is to wear the blue jacket, to represent a family of over 600,000 active members of the FFA, to serve as a symbol that represents the belief in a life guided by the sunlight, brotherhood, and cooperation. There is always a battle to be fought. As FFA members, it is our opportunity and responsibility to serve in these bouts with agricultural policy, corrupt media, climate change, and whatever else ails our people. We serve as the singular voice of change that will one day end world hunger, that will one day show others the unity that we have been able to achieve by adopting a common goal, that will one day make America the way it ought to be. My friends, today is the day that we vocalize, the day that we show others that lie in silence, the path towards a life worth living. Speak up. Share your passion, not just for yourself, but for others to follow. From the state of Alaska to the Virgin Islands, and from the state of Maine to Hawaii, hear our hearts beat hundreds of thousands strong, unified as one body by a single purpose. Look up and feel the warmth of the glorious sunlight of brotherhood upon your face. And always remember that wherever corn is grown, you sure as heck know FFA members meet. We are the FFA. Our voice is forever the voice of change.
Well, Jonathan's involvement in the organization led to a passion for hydroponics, something that he was proud to discuss when the Homesteady podcast recently caught up with him and his father, Vince.
We're here with Vince and Jonathan. Jonathan has been doing aquaponics and hydroponics since...
since the seventh grade, about seventh 6 years ago.
So while his peers were playing with Legos and Lincoln Logs, he was building hydroponic systems.
Building a garden.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now he's selling kits. He's doing a lot of work with FFA.
What's the smallest scale you've done for a customer?
The smallest scale that I've done and sold is my deep water culture bucket kits. It's just a recycled 5 gallon bucket. Hook an airline to it, but the gist of it is I built it as a kit for like classroom applications.
Oh,
you could bring it into the classroom, set it up with everybody watching, and just kind of use it as an educational resource.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I come from an agricultural school, so I wanted something that I could use to help my fellow students to kind of get them into it. The gist of hydroponics is the non-usage of soil. So you're using the water as a conduit for transferring nutrients directly to the plants.
Okay.
This results in a doubled or more growth rate and doubled production in your plants. You know, lettuce typically takes anywhere between 60 and 70 days from planting to harvest. In a hydroponic system, it can take 25 to 30 days. Yeah, that's really one of the major benefits of it, just the quick crop turnover and then also productivity. You know, I get heads of romaine that tall out of this system, and it's amazing. This is deep water culture.
Deep water culture.
The gist is that the roots of the plant are being suspended into a body of water, covering them in water that's filled with nutrients for them to absorb as much as they can.
And they just absorb all those nutrients directly through the water.
Okay. Directly, which is why hydroponics works. It just, you know, that direct connection between the nutrients and the plant allows them to grow to their fullest potential.
So you have to do a lot of, I guess in some ways, kind of like a pool, like just maintaining the correct level of nutrients and whatnot in the water. How much work does that take normally?
It's minimal work. You come out here maybe 5 minutes a day, make sure nothing's dry.
Okay.
I mean, you just got to top it off every once in a while to make sure that those roots do stay fully submerged in water.
Okay.
These beds were specially designed to support a family of four or five. When it comes to lettuce in particular, I know that our household goes through 3 to 4 heads of lettuce per week just for sandwiches, salads, and that kind of thing. So I set it up to where if you do rotate the plants out, plant three every day, you can get a stream.
Once, so you'd cycle this where like every day you could harvest three, plant three.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, it's just large enough so that you could
accomplish something like that and have a constant stream of produce.
Okay.
During the winter, our lettuce consumption is low, and we have it inside underneath grow lights.
Awesome.
Yeah, so we just plant 9 at a clip.
Love it.
And what's nice about the rock wool is you don't have to plant them all today. You can actually leave them in there in the tray for another week, and they won't get too lanky.
Yeah.
But now you've spaced your grow out by a week.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, and it also gives you time to walk up down the street, pedal to neighbors and stuff too.
Oh, love that.
Buy and support. And that's what we do with the eggs. Jonathan wanted chickens. He got chickens. He sells the eggs. Pays for the feed. It's love our first hobby that we're not upside down. You know, which is a miracle in itself.
I love it.
Yeah. Good. That's great.
And you were smart. Send the kid to sell the eggs. That's what I did.
Yeah, they weren't open the door for me.
Right. Not interested. You guys have found ways to do this with everything from Home Depot.
Right.
Set up yourself. Yeah. There's not a whole lot of money there.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you can get a lot of production on. You know how much a head of lettuce or bok choy costs? It's a couple bucks at the store.
Yeah.
So you're looking at it, it's like, all right, that's easy, $90 worth of produce.
Right.
And if that whole bed costs that, I'd be amazed.
But hydroponics isn't Jonathan's only focus. He's also personally involved in local issues. An FFA Today contributor and host of the Off-Farm Income podcast, Matt Breckwald, talked to Jonathan to learn more.
Well, Jonathan, you've done quite a bit of advocating for agriculture as well as the FFA, namely with your Hear Our Voice videos. Could you tell us what those are and how those came about?
Yeah, so the Hear Our Voice campaign was really an idea that I came up with after hearing that our ag programs were in trouble of losing some of their funding. You know, it just kind of speaks to how agriculturally illiterate people are in this part of the country. And I felt the need to reach out and try to educate people. So I created a couple of videos, one directed to my fellow FFA members, kind of informing them of the issue at hand, and the second directly to members in our community and political officials within the state, urging them to vote against the proposed budget cut.
Okay, so there was a set of budget cuts on the docket that you found out about, and this was your attempt to make sure that did not go through.
Yes, it was.
Got it. And now, when you made these videos, when you made the videos for the FFA members in and around your area, in your chapter, as well as the one for the people involved in government and in the community, was there a call to action? Was there something that you were asking them to do after they had watched your video?
I was really just asking them to, as for the members, I was really just asking them to share it with everyone they know. Even if it didn't make a political impact in that perspective, who knows? It could have ended up on somebody's desktop somewhere that could possibly make a difference.
And what kind of response did you receive?
I received a great response. It actually somehow made its way to the National FFA, and they actually shared my second video on their page, and there was just an explosion in views, and it really was amazing. I've heard back from all sorts of people from different organizations within the state saying, hey, we're going to back you. And yeah, so.
All right, Jonathan. So why you? Why was it you who was doing this? Was this something that you were called to do by your chapter, by the state FFA, or did you just feel compelled on your own to make a statement about this?
I really just felt compelled to do it. Nowadays, a lot of people start political campaigns and whatnot via social media. And out of the people in, at least on the Connecticut FFA officer team, I was the most technologically savvy. So it really, I knew that I was the only one that was able to kind of pull it off. But they were there the whole way to support me.
And was this your first time doing something like this?
Definitely. Yeah, I've never tried to pull anything off like this.
And how about since then? Have you done more?
So I haven't had a reason to do more exactly like that. I've been doing a bunch of video work since for the Connecticut FFA in promoting our own events and that kind of thing.
And you talked about the agricultural literacy of the area that you live in. Tell us a little bit about the area that you're located.
Well, I mean, down here in the fairly urban area of Fairfield County, people just, they you know, they think that by paying more money for food, it's by default better. They're, all of them are spending tons of money on organic and that kind of thing, and they just completely shut down the idea of conventional agriculture, commercial agriculture. You know, they automatically go to thoughts of production such as Food Inc., which really highlight some of the supposed cruelties of the agricultural industry, and assume that that's what the whole industry is. So it really hasn't really taken hold in this part of the country where people are afraid of it.
Got it. Got it. Well, this is really interesting that you saw an issue coming up. You didn't feel intimidated. You were compelled to act and to speak out on it. So how does this bode for your future, Jonathan? Is there a future in politics or a future in lobbying for you?
Well, that I've yet to decide upon that. You know, I might pop into office for a little bit, see what happens. But as of now, I'm probably just going to continue doing what I'm doing. You know, if there is a call to action of sorts, a cause for me to go out there and speak up, I will do so. But I have no vision at the moment of a career in it.
All right. Well, thank you very much for talking with us about this today. And thank you very much for all your advocacy efforts, Jonathan.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
For FFA Today, I'm Matt Breckwald.
Certainly an impressive young man with a bright future ahead of him. Keep up the good work, Jonathan. Well, now, if you're an ag advisor or ag teacher, don't go anywhere. We'll catch up with one of the nation's most awarded advisors, sharing his keys to SAE success. That's next on Rural Radio 147. Well, welcome back to the show. And if you're an advisor overseeing your student's SAE project, or maybe a member working on one, get ready to take a few notes. Keith Gundlach, FFA advisor for the Randolph-Cambria-Friesland FFA chapter in Randolph, Wisconsin, shares the story of his long career, including a few tips that have earned him the nickname Mr. SAE for having earned an amazing number of grants and sent a remarkable number of students to nationals for their projects.
This is my 40th year here. I retired 2 years ago, but there's a shortage of ag teachers, so I came back. We have two schools that make up this ag program. Down the road is a school called Cambria-Friesland High School. They take a bus at 10 minutes before the end of an hour at Cambria. A bell rings, they get on the bus, and they come over here. Cambria-Friesland is a school of about 100 students, and 27 of them come here for ag classes. Our high school is 165, 170, and we have about 100 kids in the school that take ag classes here. We also have a middle school program, mandatory for the Randolph students, elective for the Cambria students. We also, I also have 11 or 12 kids on a youth apprenticeship program that I visit, try to once or twice a week use youth apprenticeship visits. I see all of them at least twice a semester and talk to their employer. It's fortunate because a lot of their employers are my former students. The program here, as a matter of fact, I interviewed for this program and was offered the job and turned it down because I wanted to go to Waterloo because they had a big nursery there. But they convinced me to come here at the time, and I just sort of stayed. We started the first year with 21 students. 17 of them were DF students every 9 weeks. Frustrating first year. Now, I usually have, out of the top 10 students in every class, I usually have 7 or 8 of them, most often than not the valedictorian. We offer 11 classes, some on an alternate year basis. My students have SAEs. When we start them, if they don't, their SAE might be babysitting, which isn't one, but at least they learn to keep records. And then they grow into something like that. I think the program added an animal lab. We've gone through our second greenhouse we're in right now. We have a 40-acre land lab. I pay 10 to 12 students $9 an hour to work there. But we also have an Ag and FA Foundation with 230-some thousand in cash, and that generates $5,600 a year interest. So it's pretty nice that we can afford to pay them. We do have an exchange program with an agricultural high school in Graz, Austria. I've been there, and they take us on tours to Italy and other schools in Europe. So that's a pretty nice thing to do. Our FFA, I think, has just in excess of 370 members. We're an affiliated chapter. If you ever get to the point where you can make that decision, I think you all should have affiliated chapters. And one of the reasons for that is sometimes in the area of SAE, you get what we call a late bloomer, someone who's been actively working, and then all of a sudden as a sophomore, hey, I want to do this. Well, their FFA membership is already in place. The FFA here is a big advocate of advocacy. Our FFA president does a monthly update. But that goes to all the area legislators, all our scholarship sponsors, two school boards, the Ag Advisory Council, and anyone else who's a supporter of the program. Let's see, I'm a big believer in the three-circle model, and I sort of have a reputation of the SAE area, but I do a lot of workshops for Wisconsin teachers. I've done some in South Dakota. I always tell young teachers you have to have the curriculum first. If you don't have the curriculum, you're not going to have SAEs because you won't have the students. So it's important that you do that. And SAEs is a cornerstone. I have a middle school program. I see all the Randolph students. I don't see the Cambria students. So sometimes you get freshmen that have no idea what an SAE is. My seventh graders don't discuss FFA much because their six-week rotation, I don't have it. The eighth graders have 4 or 5 days. But we do an SAE survey. I think Dr. Foster might have that. I'm not sure. But that survey lets me see what they do in the summertime or it lets me see where they're working. I give that survey in the spring. And then I give it the third week of school in the fall in case there's been some changes or anything like that. Wisconsin teachers are amused over the fact that I sometimes tell freshmen they'll be a state proficiency winner. And you can really tell that. There are some crackerjack programs here. My approach to SAEs is to use that survey. And when I use that survey, it lets me know the area of interest, where they work, or something in that format. And then I introduce them to the record book. I always, of course, AET is where it's at. And some of my students haven't adjusted to AET that well. And so I put them in the old record book that I developed in the early 90s. We've had 160, 170 state proficiency winners. Virtually all of them as a result of that record book. So it does work good. Most of my applications come from there. My favorite class, of course, is Farm Business Management. I am teaching the first grandchild of a former student this year. She's pretty sharp, and she'll have a good SAE in ag communications and ag education. And then there's a whole pile more, but I should be retired before they get here.
Well, thanks to Keith for that lesson, and hopefully you've heard something here that can apply to your own project and take it to the next level. Well, that brings the show to a close, but if you have something that you'd like to hear on the program or something you'd like to learn more about or share with us, you can let us know. Shoot us an email, send it to FFAtoday@FFA.org, or give us a call, 855-RR on 147. That's 855-776-1147. Until next week, I'm Janet Atkinson with FFA Today on Rural Radio 147, Sirius XM.